This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School podcast, episode number 125, Anxiety, Depression, and Consciousness, an interview with Dr. Mark Halpern. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Welcome to the podcast today. I'm excited to have all of you here for another beautiful week as we dive into Ayurveda even further. And as those of you who've been listening for a while to the show know that I like to bring on special guests on occasion. And so this week, we're really privileged to have someone who I consider to be my mentor and teacher due to our connection through my training, Dr. Mark Halpern. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll let him just share anything that I missed that he wants to tell you about his background. Dr. Halpern is a doctor of chiropractic medicine, and he's also an Ayurvedic doctor. And what I love about him is the history and the pioneer heritage he has about bringing Ayurveda to the West, because there was a time there was no Ayurveda in the Western world. And so knowing that we have someone who kind of brought that to America in a big way is really important. And if you've ever heard of NAMA, the National Ayurveda Medical Association, Dr. Halpern was co-founder in that. He's co-founded the California Association of Ayurvedic Medicine and the National Council on Ayurvedic Education. And I tell you that just so you know, he's got some deep roots. He's got some deep roots in Ayurveda. But what's most inspiring to me about you, Dr. Halpern, is your own journey, your own journey through healing. And in one of the books that you wrote, Healing Your Life, Lessons on the Path of Ayurveda, which I have shared with so many people, it's one that I just buy multiple copies so that I can give to others because it was so life-changing for me in the beginning of my Ayurvedic studies, but where you share your own personal story of illness and coming back to wholeness and finding Ayurveda. And I think that's just inspiring because so many of us go through not the same exact physical struggles, but we go through struggles physically, emotionally, and knowing that there's a path to healing and that Ayurveda has answers that can help us when maybe we've looked everywhere else and we haven't been able to find them. To me, that's one of the most beautiful things about your story. And I studied at the California College of Ayurveda, where you are the president and founder. And so I feel a real personal connection to you in that way, even though we haven't got to spend a lot of time together in that capacity. But, you know, hopefully down the road that will continue. But welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Heather. And it's an honor to be here with you and to reach out to your audience and to inspire them more about Ayurveda. And I really appreciate the work that you've been doing with the Ayurveda Life School to bring Ayurveda to the community and to make it real and to make it an everyday experience for people. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing.
Well, I have enjoyed every moment of it. It was scary in the beginning, you know, like anything that's new, but it's been really fun to just kind of jump into that community. It's amazing how many people need it and how they find you when they're ready for it.
Yeah, you know, everybody is looking to be healthier and everybody's looking to have more peace of mind. And I think that Ayurveda is so beautiful because when you follow the guidelines, when you follow the teachings, you receive what I have found over 30 years, everybody's looking for greater health and well-being and greater peace of mind. And I think you said it well earlier, greater wholeness, greater sense of connectedness to each other, to ourselves, and to the world around us. And I think that's one of the beautiful gifts of Ayurveda.
Well, and I like that it's accessible. And that's something that I've tried to do with what I've done in my work. And I feel like you've done that so much by helping people to find it. And when I found the California College of Ayurveda, I was just kind of starting in my journey and I'd met another practitioner who had studied there. And so I'm picking his brain. Tell me what you think, you know, what was your studies like there? And I'd found Ayurveda through yoga teacher training, which I think a lot of people do. I mean, I've heard that a lot from our listeners is that they've either delved into yoga, they've started teaching yoga and they've heard about this thing, you know, and most of them say it wrong. And they, you know, and then I tell them there's no wrong way to say it. You say however it feels in your heart. And, but I think that there's an accessibility to it, but it's confusing at the same time. It's accessible and available more than it was before, but people get a little stuck in the details and maybe the Sanskrit and I think the more we can help them to understand that it is applicable to daily life. It's not just for a guru sitting on a hillside somewhere, you know, drinking his, you know, Tulsi tea, that it's everyone can really participate in Ayurveda. And I don't know, I wanted to see what your thoughts were on that, because you've watched this evolution over the last many decades of, was it 1995? Is that when the school was founded? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, the school was founded in 1995. My journey into Ayurveda began around 1990. And back then, nobody knew what Ayurveda was. There was a handful of people that were starting to hear the word through the writings of Deepak Chopra. But other than that, nobody had really known what Ayurveda is. And I would travel around and I would talk to groups of people at yoga studios and bookstores and try to inspire them about Ayurveda. And we'd always have a handful of people that would show up, but nobody really had known what their constitution is or even what that meant. Nobody had heard of the doshas or vata, pitta, and kapha. And even when I went to the first large yoga studios and large yoga ashrams in the world, even there, very few people who were students and guests at these centers knew what Ayurveda was. And I'm very impressed, actually, with what has taken place over the last 30 years, because Ayurveda has actually grown tremendously. Today, there's an Ayurvedic industry, and that's really incredible from where we began in 1990. Many people, most people, I think, especially here in California, have heard of Ayurveda, even if they don't know exactly what it is. They've heard of the doshas, or they've heard of Ayurvedic herbs or Ayurvedic medicines. And so today it's very different. When I go places and I give talks, whether it's here in the United States or in other parts of the world, now there's larger audiences that are coming to hear and to learn. I think you said it well when you said Ayurveda is really a truly practical science, because it really is practical. It's about how you live your life. And I think of that as practice. It is how you live determines how you feel. And that makes intuitive sense to everybody. So how can I live in a manner that is going to help me to feel well, physically, emotionally, and perhaps even at the level of something greater than our body and our mind, at the level of our consciousness. And so Ayurveda is really a truly wonderful science. It's very, very clear. It's actually easy to understand. It's not as complicated as you might think it is, learning something new. Sure, there's a few new words that we learn about the doshas and vata, pitta, kapha, but in terms of bringing it into everyday life, it's really very practical. It covers how you live from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed. And I like to say that where there's harmony, there's health. And where there's disharmony, there's disease. And if you live harmoniously, the fruit of that is optimum health and peace of mind. And if you live disharmoniously, well, the consequences of that are going to be that your health is going to diminish and you're going to have greater stresses, greater dramas in the mind. So it's actually a very simple set of principles. Of course, it's difficult to apply that into our lives because Ayurveda asks us to make change. Mm-hmm. And none of us likes to make change. We want to, as we say, have our cake and eat it. So I want to live disharmoniously and I want to feel good. Yeah. I want to do what I want to do and have peace of mind. And Ayurveda says, yeah, but they're linked together. You know, how you live, how you act in the world does affect your body. It does affect your mind. And so it's a gradual process of transforming our lifestyle, transforming our consciousness. And the fruit of that is seen in the body and in the mind.
Popular guy right there. No worries. Well, and I like when you're talking harmony and it's cause and effect. And I don't care if you're 2 years old or you're 92 years old. It sometimes is hard to hold on to that, because we forget, or I have found I'll implement a practice and I'll be really dedicated to that practice, maybe like meditation. And then something happens that kind of throws me off of that wheel of meditation, whether I go on a trip or, you know, I have unexpected visitors and my schedule feels a little bit different. And what I like is it's there to come back to, but I also know it's hard sometimes to stay consistent, but I don't think it's about being perfect. And I really feel like that is a barrier for people when they find Ayurveda, is they're so excited about all these things they're learning. And then they want to do them all. and they want to do them all perfectly. And it creates a lot of emotional distress. And then they feel worse afterwards about who they are as a person because they weren't able to attain this, you know, level where they're looking outward and seeing, oh, I think that person's doing it perfect or that person's doing it perfect. So I'm always really quick to tell people I'm not doing it perfect. I'm practicing. It's a lifetime experience where I'm always working on different aspects. And that might shift depending on what I need right now. But I probably look at you and think, Dr. Halperin's definitely got it all right. He knows all the things. He's written the textbooks. Like this is a person that, you know, probably is like 99% there all the time. But I think it's important for people to hear the reality. So is it like that for you, the way that it is for me, or how do you feel about that aspect of Ayurveda?
Well, I think it's just like it is for you, for me. And I think that's what it means to be human. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. And I appreciate your humility acknowledging that it is something that you practice, that you try to do, but there are things that sometimes get in the way. Mm-hmm. And we all aspire to be perfect. And that's sometimes part of our challenge is the aspiration to be perfect, because the idea of perfection is an illusion. Ayurveda and yoga, and Ayurveda is the healing side of yoga. Ayurveda and yoga teach that the only time we're going to experience perfection is in those moments just before complete self-realization and liberation. In other words, liberation from the cycle of birth and death. In other words, that becoming one with all of creation. Mm. So just to put that into a practical understanding, that means that you're going to live your entire life. And if you believe in reincarnation, lifetimes aspiring to be something that you're not right now, but you're working toward that. And if you think that you're supposed to be that now, well, then there's no journey to walk. Then there's nothing to do, no transformation that needs to take place. In fact, Ayurveda and yoga would teach that when you reach that place, your physical existence actually is no longer necessary, because we're here first and foremost to learn and to grow. And so if there is no learning to take place, if there is no growth to take place, then why are we here? Ultimately, we would be sitting still, perfectly still in meditation, and we wouldn't even be caught up in the drama of needing to eat, needing to drink water. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we would exit our bodies and we would become one with all of creation. And this is the end of the journey, according to yoga, is complete liberation. And so for the rest of us, we're here engaged in the journey to become optimally healthy and to experience peace of mind, to grow and to learn. We all have our growing edges. And just like it is for you, it is for me. It's two steps forward, one step back. There are things that are going to get in the way, whether it's the dramas of life or it's physical illness. You're right that you get into a routine. And when you get into a routine, it becomes easier and easier. So it becomes easier and easier to meditate in the morning, easier and easier to do your yoga practices in the morning, your Ayurvedic practices of self-oil massage and doing neti and things like that. But then something gets in the way and the routine is broken. Now you have to reestablish the routine. And that takes a deep breath and it takes sort of starting over in a way to reestablish the routine. And I think what's important is for people to realize that that's normal, that that's okay, and to have self-compassion and to realize, yes, it is a journey. And we are making those changes. I remember when I first made that transformation toward being a vegetarian, which was now a long time ago. Leading up to that, in the years leading up to that, I dabbled in it. I made some changes in my diet and so forth. And then one day I finally woke up and I was ready to make that complete transformation, and I did, and I never went back. And so that was a transformation of my consciousness that then was reflected in my mind and in my body and in my behaviors. And that's really what we're looking for in Ayurveda and yoga. It's a transformation of our consciousness. When we make that shift so deep inside of ourselves, that's when the transformation of mind, body, and behavior becomes permanent. But it's not so easy to make that shift at the level of our consciousness. So at first, consciousness is still where it is, but we start dabbling with, well, I'm going to see what it's like to not have coffee. I'm going to see what it's like to not have meat or to not have alcohol. Or I'm going to see what it's like to meditate in the morning. And so we start making those behavioral transformations before we have fully made the consciousness transformation. And that's why it comes and it goes, it comes and it goes. But eventually that's part of the natural process of transforming our consciousness. And when we do that, the behavior just becomes now, you know, second nature, just like it is for a child brushing their teeth. Look at how difficult it is for a child learning to brush their teeth. My kids, my boys, really did not like to brush their teeth. And sometimes they would, and sometimes they wouldn't, and they'd get into the routine, and then they'd stop. And it's ongoing work. But eventually, now it's part of their consciousness. Now they couldn't imagine starting a day without brushing their teeth. And that's what happens with all the Ayurvedic practices. We get there. We get to the point where I can't imagine, not cleaning my tongue in the morning. I can't imagine not doing neti in the morning. I can't imagine not meditating in the morning. And so we get there, but we have to realize that it takes time. It takes time. So self-love and self-compassion is part of that journey. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, in fact, that is the bigger part of the journey. The challenges along the way with our behaviors and how we react to them are really reflections of how much we love ourselves and how compassionate and kind we are to ourselves. And so they serve as a mirror. So I'm going to do this so that I have the opportunity to look more deeply at myself. In the end, it's not about the practices. It's not about doing neti. It's not about doing abhyanga or self-oil massage. It's not even about eating properly. In the end of our lives, and this whole journey of our lives is really about how much do I love myself and how much am I able to love others? And that's what all of this is about. Everything else is really just entertainment.
I love how you said that, because it takes away the focus from the doing and it changes it more to the being. Like, what am I becoming through the doing? And I think from a Western standpoint, where we're so focused on the actions, we forget that there's a deeper change that we're looking for that has nothing to do with, like you said, did I do my oil massage today or not? And when we get caught up in that list, I've had a lot of clients that love the list. They want the first appointment, right? They want to just have me tell them all the things I need to do. Give me a list and I'll do them. And if often you don't give them, you don't give them the list, but then they go find the list because they look online and they're finding what are all the practices they should be doing. And then they're trying to do them all. And they try to sustain that. And then they come back and they crash and burn because they haven't seen the intention. And I love to go back to just have a warm cooked breakfast. Start with something easy, right? You're right now eating cold smoothies in the morning or you're having coffee. How about we just add this in and create a little bit of an anchor to start creating some change? And the whole story and this idea of consciousness, I think, can be really tricky to understand and to see. But I feel like we see sometimes those changes in people's where they're at consciously, like on their subconscious level, we are able to see it sometimes more than they can as they make those shifts. And I'm sure when you were finding Ayurveda and moving into that space of yoga, that as you began to change on a deeper level, maybe someone around you noticed it first. I don't know. That's just been my experiences that people I haven't seen in a while when I wasn't involved in studying and self-reflection and trying to grow and evolve. They'll see me now and say, you're a lot different than you used to be. But I don't realize it because it's been incremental.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. You know, I think that if I go back decades, you know, if I go back, unfortunately, too many decades into my 20s, then, and I look at my life at that time, and I compare it to my life now, it was a very different life I was living, a very different lifestyle that I was living. And the work that I've done through the work of Ayurveda and the work of yoga has certainly transformed my way of being in the world. And yes, absolutely, people around me notice that as well. It's part of the continuing evolution of who we are. We're not static beings. We do have tendencies that we are incarnated with, what we call in yoga samskaras, and they are the greatest challenges because they want to keep on returning and keep on bubbling up. And as we heal at the deepest levels of our consciousness or awareness, indeed, we do remove those tendencies. But those deepest tendencies, they will bubble up. And you're right that the people around you notice the difference. They notice the difference in your continence, in your calmness, in your just your capacity to love and to allow yourself to be loved, just your way of being in the world. We say that the world around us is a reflection of what's going on inside of us. So as we change on the inside, the world around us changes as well. We see the world differently and the world sees us differently, not because the world is any different, but because we've made a transformation on the inside. And that's what this whole life is really about. It's about how much transformation can we make toward again, you know, I like this language, the transformation is about deepening our capacity to love and be loved. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, then the world around us changes because we start seeing love and experiencing love in all those different places. And that changes the people that we wind up connecting with as well in the world. You know, we generally tend to connect more with people who are like who we are. And so if we want to change the community of people we're hanging out with, then it happens naturally as we transform ourselves on the inside. And that's what this life really is. It's an inside job.
I love that. Well, and we wanted to talk today a little bit about an inside job, as it were, dealing with some of the mental aspects that really challenge a lot of people right now. And they're things that I feel like, especially with the world and what's going on with the pandemic and where some places were coming out and then we're kind of having a resurgence of that. These are emotions that we're seeing more and more often. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how emotions, specifically anxiety and depression is what I'm referring to, how that kind of ties in from that consciousness level and then how we then work on it on a physical space, because that's really where we have the most access, right? Is to kind of start from that place and work into that. And I come from a family history of some mental depression. There's a lot of, suicide issues, just some different things in there. And anxiety and depression, I think sometimes get either lumped together, like they're the same thing, or people think they're so different. But from an Ayurvedic standpoint, there's a lot of story or a history behind how we can look at anxiety and depression that maybe makes it a little more clear as to what we're actually talking about and takes away some of the stigma. Because I think there is a stigma with both of those words, you know, he has an anxiety disorder or they suffer from depression. And we create a story about what that means for that person and who they are as a person. But I think they're sometimes the same coin, just maybe being looked at a little bit differently in how they're manifesting. At least that's been my experience from my clients and dealing with Ayurveda. But what are your thoughts there? I just want to kind of talk about that a little bit, because I think that will help people to see, for one, that it's not something they need to feel like stigmatized about if they're experiencing that, and what it actually is from a doshic standpoint, what's happening for people when they're experiencing these emotions.
Well, let's just start with the idea, first of all, that we all suffer. Every human being that is walking on this planet suffers, whether there is some suffering happening physically, whether it's happening emotionally, or whether it's happening at an existential level. Who am I? And why am I even here? Every human being is suffering. And I think we often think that there are people that are not having any suffering at all. And therefore, there's something really wrong with me. Why am I the one that is suffering? And I think that when we really start to understand that, that we can really relax into the idea that we're not perfect. And I like to begin there, because you're right, mental illness is a social stigma. Mm-hmm. Physical illness can be a social stigma as well. And even what I'll call behavioral disharmony can also be a social stigma. Think of smokers, yeah, and the social stigma that happens because of their behavior. Drinkers, the social stigma that happens because of their behaviors. Even within the more perfect community, the social stigma that happens maybe if somebody sees you drinking a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. Social stigma can be in any area. And then you have your your mental stigmas, right? And anxiety, depression, the multitude of diagnoses that people have about being bipolar or obsessive compulsive, and so many different imperfections. And I say that with pride, because the opposite is perfection, which is an illusion. And yeah. So really, to some degree, we all have physical and mental imperfections. And that's because this body and this mind, from an Ayurvedic perspective, is transient. It's going to break down. It is trying to sustain itself. It is struggling to exist. And the body is struggling to exist in this idea of perfection that we have. So we all want to have the perfect yoga body. And the mind is struggling to exist in this idea of perfection as complete and total peace of mind and bliss. And so if I'm not blissful all the time and I can't perform every asana, then there must be something wrong with me. And when we really make peace with that, when we reconcile with that idea, then we can go a little bit further and say, okay, well, it's actually normal to be imperfect. So let's just settle into letting that be okay. Now, with that understanding, we all want to move toward greater and greater peace of mind and greater optimum health. Mm-hmm. And it's helpful to understand these concepts of Ayurveda to allow us to do that. And anxiety and depression do have a lot in common with each other. And they have a lot of the same symptoms. So sometimes it's very difficult to tell the difference between them. Like, you can have insomnia with both. You can have irritability with both of these. And so it's really quite challenging. It can, both of them can cloud and confuse the mind. And so in many ways, they're very much the same. And the way in which they're different with each other really is that anxiety, from a symptomatic perspective, produces more restlessness. There's more energy coursing through the body that is disturbing it and making it, you know, just for lack of a better analogy, making it shake a little from the amount of energy that is coursing through the subtle body.
Yeah.
And depression shows that more is a loss of interest in everyday activities. And so there's more of a withdrawal with depression, and it's more about how maybe we're responding to some of the psychological angst. We're still getting the confusion and the irritability and the sleeplessness, but we're responding with withdrawal and loss of interest in the world. And that loss of interest can be very, very serious. And so there's a lot that is similar, and there are also some things that are different. And there are people who go back and forth a little bit, having a little bit of one and a little bit of another. And so not everybody with anxiety has the same condition. I think that's also important to understand. Not everybody with depression has the same condition. From an Ayurvedic perspective, we like to look at everybody as a unique individual. There's never been another you, and there's never been another person who is suffering exactly the way you're suffering. We put names on conditions, but really what we have are individual situations. And Ayurveda seeks to understand the way in which these imbalances are manifesting within you, and then to be able to prescribe a program of care to restore you back to your true self. And I want to emphasize that last part, your true self, because your true self is optimally healthy. Your true self is peace of mind. Your true self is as an unconditionally loving human being. And that's who you are. Everything else is just in the way. And so the Ayurvedic program is trying to remove those obstacles so that your true nature can reemerge. And when your true nature reemerges, then you have the fruit of that in your life, which is going to, if not be perfect, it's going to improve your life in a way that's going to improve your relationships. It's going to improve your capacity to be of service, and it's going to improve the joy that you experience in your life every day. And I think that's what most people are looking for. So Ayurveda does understand all of this, of course, in terms of its own language. And the language of Ayurveda is the language of the three doshas, Vata and Pitta and Kapha. Ayurveda understands it in terms of your constitution, which are the tendencies you come into the world with. We use a fancy word called prakriti in order to understand that. But it means really that we all came into the world a certain way with certain unique tendencies, including the tendencies for imbalances. We came into the world with it. And Ayurveda uses the language of understanding how those doshas have become disturbed, if you will, and affect your physiology, your physiology of your body and your physiology of your mind. And the fancy word we use for that is vikriti. And so that's what's happening right now in your body and in your mind. Ayurveda goes further for those that want to go further. Not everybody needs to understand all the nuances. You just need a good practitioner to guide you. But for those that want to understand the nuances of it, Ayurveda goes deeper into understanding the subtle energies that course through your mind and your subtle body. Mm-hmm. And so that includes the understanding of what's called prana, tejas, and ojas. These three subtle energies that are the subtle form of the three doshas. Prana could be said to be the subtle form of the vata dosha. Tejas is the even more subtle form of pitta dosha. And ojas is the more subtle or pure form of kapha dosha. And so by understanding this language, it's really understanding a unique way of interpreting physiology. And we really could say that anxiety and depression is a disturbance in your physiology. And of course, the West would say the same thing, where the West seeks to understand that in its own language, in terms of neurohormones and neurotransmitters in the brain and your unique biochemistry, and then has treatment protocols in order to alter your biochemistry. Ayurveda has its unique way of understanding physiology. And Ayurveda also seeks then to alter your physiology, but rather than through a biochemical model, through a lifestyle and dietary model that is going to obviously shift your biochemistry and bring it back into a balanced place. So in fact, when you live your life harmoniously and you start to make new behaviors, change your behaviors and change your diet, your physiology completely changes. And with that, how you feel. And so your anxiety and your depression can be corrected by making these changes in diet and lifestyle. So we have a different language, but we have really the same goals, which is to reestablish homeostasis or balance within your physiology. It's just a little bit of a different language and a little bit of a different approach. Rather than reliance upon drugs, we're going to rely upon diet, herbs, and lifestyle, and aspects of yoga as well, in order to restore normal physiology, to bring the doshas back to their proper balance, to bring the subtle energies, prana, tejas, and ojas, back to their normal balance, and to transform consciousness in a way that results in clarity, so that when we have clarity in the form of our consciousness, physiology actually maintains its normalcy. And the word we use for that in our language is the cultivation of sattva. Mm-hmm. Sattva means the cultivation of clarity in our consciousness or in our awareness. And from that place, we realize our connectedness to each other, to the world around us, to all of existence. And it's from that connectedness that we can sustain balance in our mind and even balance within our body. So we can get into more detail on all of that, but I wanted to put that bigger picture together for you first.
It's a really good frame to come from, because we realize we are working towards a similar goal, as you know, when you're looking at anxiety and depression from a Western standpoint. But I like that it requires a little bit of activity on the part of the person, because you're not just taking in medication and like leaving it in the hands of someone else. It takes back a little bit of that ownership of, I can create this transformation or move through this anxiety and depression. And I like that you mentioned we're all perfectly imperfect, right? So some things are more apparent on the outside than others. And tendencies are interesting too, because you look and sometimes there's familial tendencies, you know, you'll have like where I've got a familial tendency towards depression, but it manifests very differently among my family members, right? And the way that we kind of work that out and how we experience that. And from my point of view, if I'm in something that I would consider a depressive kind of emotion, movement, it just every time, movement helps me every time. And so I know now Ayurvedically, you know, there's some kapha that I'm overcoming there and some of that inertia and that stagnation. And once I can create movement physically, and it calms that, it like brings that energy back up. And then I'm back into a state where I can actually have a little more clarity instead of feeling so like, oh, the world is too heavy. I can't deal with this anymore. I have other siblings that deal with it in different ways. Breath work is really useful, is something that we have found too. But when someone's in that state, taking action is really difficult, right? Depending on the severity of how we're dealing with our anxiety or dealing with depression, even moving into a space where we're able to do something about it. And I think that's why medication is often someone's first, you know, choice, because that's easy. They feel like I can do that, but you've got to take steps to actually create that physiological change, ultimately that change to consciousness. And then you might still see that you kind of dip back in and out. I think that's important for people to know too. It's not, well, I was feeling anxious today, now I'm good. Like I took care of that. You know, I did my grounding yoga practice and no more anxiety ever again. And so not being surprised when, if that is a tendency for you to have that come back again, but tools, like I want to talk tools for a minute, because making it practical for people now that they have a frame of what do we view it at from an Ayurvedic standpoint, what are actual tools that we can use that Ayurveda has taught us that help? And maybe for people who, you know, doing anything is going to be challenging in the beginning, or it's recurrent. Like I have seasonal depression, or I'm really struggling anytime there's change in my environment, my anxiety rises. And we realize we can't control what's happening outside of us, but we can then take that opportunity to say, okay, this is what I can do proactively when I see I'm feeling this way, or I know that this situation could kind of promote those feelings within me. But from a doshic standpoint, like I love to talk, okay, well, what dosha is that's rising when we feel those feelings? So, yeah.
Let's talk first about anxiety. And, okay. Anxiety is mostly an imbalance in the vata dosha. And if we take it a little bit further, it's also accompanied by high prana and low ojas. And so that's, if we were to look at the picture, that gives us then the direction for how to treat it. So if we know that vata is high, we want to pacify vata. You know, prana is high, we want to pacify the prana. We know ojas is low, so we want to increase ojas. But what does that really mean? So when vata dosha is too high and when prana is too high, there's too much motion within our subtle body. Prana, or life energy, we could say, is moving too chaotically in the subtle body through the channels of the subtle body. In yoga, we talk about there being 72,000 subtle channels. But let's just say for now that it's just moving erratically in those channels. So we want to try to slow down, and we also want to create regular routines, because that's going to correct the erraticness of the movement of life energy in our bodies. When we have irregular routines, then the prana, the life energy, becomes unstable and moves in an erratic manner. When we have regular healthy routines, then it's going to move in a healthy manner and not be so chaotic. So that's very, very important. So understanding that, we want to have a regular routine of eating the proper foods at the proper times, and waking up at proper times and going to bed at proper times. And that's all very important. It has to become like clockwork for somebody with anxiety. Individuals who are really progressing on this path come to realize that if they can exert some control over their environment and create these routines and prioritize these routines, the way in which they feel is so much better. Mm-hmm. So it just, you don't have to do everything, but just say, waking up in the morning at a certain time and being committed to that, eating and sitting down when you eat at a proper time for breakfast, for lunch, mm-hmm. for dinner, and then going to bed at a proper time. This, just these five things, right? Wake up, breakfast, lunch, dinner, go to bed. Like clockwork, that regular routine takes away the chaotic energy and is going to help to balance the Vata dosha, reduce the prana. Now, we also need to raise the ojas, because ojas is what stabilizes the mind. Now, we all want to have that stability. And it's also what winds up creating a general sense of contentment. We feel better when our ojas is higher, and it stabilizes the prana and the vata so that they don't go out of balance. So it's really important to also build up the ojas. And the way that's done is first and foremost by taking in ojas building foods, because ojas comes through proper digestion. So we have to digest the ojas, we have to digest the foods that have high ojas building potential. And it's not always the foods you think. Most people think about fruits and vegetables, but it's not the fruits and vegetables that actually have ojas building potential. They have other great value, but they don't have ojas building potential. So it's actually the heavier foods and the foods that are harder to digest, and the foods that give some people challenges. Mm-hmm. Things like dairy, nuts, oils. These are the ojas building foods, but they're the hardest to digest. So we have to be able to optimize our digestive system so that we're able to digest and extract out the ojas from these foods. When we don't digest it properly, rather than producing ojas, we produce something called ama. And ama is a toxin that then makes us even more sick. And that's what happens for people who take in the dairy and the whole grains and the oils and the nuts. A lot of times they don't digest it well, and they say, I can't have dairy, mm-hmm. or I can't have wheat, or I can't have oils, because they're not digesting it properly. So working with an Ayurvedic practitioner, you will be able to optimize your digestion, the power of your digestion, mm-hmm. and be able to then extract out the ojas so that you can stabilize the doshas and build up this capacity for contentment and have the peace of mind that you're looking for. So it's really this combination that's necessary of the ojas building foods, a healthy routine, and working with a good practitioner, I think, that's essential for handling anxiety. And of course, there are some favorite practices that I have as well that I think everybody will benefit from. And that includes especially mm-hmm. the practice of yoga nidra, because yoga nidra is so powerful for calming down the body, calming down the mind, and helping you to remember your true nature and remember who you are beyond the experience of anxiety. And it's really forgetting who you are beyond the experience of anxiety that makes you feel like I'm an anxious person. And mm-hmm. you're not. You're mm-hmm. you're a loving person that's experiencing some anxiety. And so you can return to that loving state through the practice of yoga nidra. And I think that's very, very important. Depression, on the other hand, is a little bit different in its physiology and what's happening. With depression, there are different kinds of depression. There's major depressive disorder, which is a very deep, dark depression. And when people have a major depressive disorder, that actually also is rooted in vata dosha disturbance. But mm-hmm. it is caused by ojas that is so low that it could no longer stabilize the prana, which is what gives you your excitement about life. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is basically your prana crashes because your ojas is so low now. Mm-hmm. The prana crashes and you lose your interest in life, because it's prana that gives you your interest in life. So at first, the prana is very high and a person may experience some anxiety with that low ojas. But then as ojas becomes even lower still, then the prana can't sustain itself, so it completely falls apart. And now you lose your interest in life. And so they're related to each other, but they're not exactly the same. With major depressive disorder, the main focus is not on working with the prana at all. It's entirely on rebuilding the ojas with major depressive disorder. So you're actually working with now the severe depression. Mm-hmm. And before you can do anything with prana, you have to focus on the nourishment and the and other ways of nourishing besides diet, such as abhyanga. And of course, you're not interested in life at that point. So you're not going to do it.
So it's, you're it's, not.
it's at that point when you need to know, okay, as I'm going into that place, who's my team? Who do I call? Now, you got to call somebody. And what most people do is they call on a drug. All right. And yeah. So, but what you can do is you can call on a good Ayurvedic doctor or clinical specialist. And at that point now, you basically start receiving Abhyanga in the clinic. And so you start getting love and oil and ojas poured into your body and poured into your mind, and you're getting your gas tank filled back up again so that you're able to now begin to do the practices in your life that are going to be able to sustain that. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really important. And once you do that, then you start having the ojas built back up. Now you actually can build up the prana again. Because remember, your prana had completely crashed, whereas in anxiety, it was too high. But now it had completely crashed. But you can only bring up that prana once you have stabilized the ojas. And now you can do that through a multitude of practices like pranayama and now bringing in the fruits and the vegetables to bring it back up again. But first, you have to build the ojas. Now, there's another kind of depression that people call dysthymia. And this kind of depression is what I would call a mild to moderate depression. It's also kind of chronic. And there's a different physiology to that. And it's not the kind of depression that is so severe or leads to even the possibility of suicide. This is just a low level melancholy. That is, you know, life's not good and I'm not happy and I'm just feeling like I want to withdraw a little bit. I'm not so dark and deep in it, but I'm just also not well in that sense. I'm not having that contentment. And that kind of dysthymia or you know, more chronic minor depression is actually the result of kapha being too high. Mm-hmm. And with that, ojas is actually high, but prana is a little bit low. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, now what we want to do is not worry about the ojas. Now what we want to do is really build up the prana. And that's where the exercise comes in that you were mentioning. Yep.
Yeah.
And also where juicing can come in. Juicing can be really great. Not juicing of the, you know, bananas and dates that people like a lot of, but rather juicing of greens. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's so full of prana, our greens and salads. If you're not going to juice, salads are great for that. And eating some fruits like peaches and nectarines, and that'll all raise the prana. And of course, giving up those things that suppress the prana, you know, and those disharmonious habits that we might have that you know, like greasy food and fast food and giving
ice cream at night, you know, you're depressed, you're eating your ice cream at night.
Yeah. Those things wind up actually suppressing the prana even more. And so that's when at night, what you can do is you could have a little bit of, you know, you're looking for a dessert. You could have a little bit of Greek yogurt and some blueberries and some strawberries in it. And if you need a little treat, you can do that, you know, and just have a little snack that way. At least it has more life energy in it than you know, ice cream and cookies are going to have, and white flour and things like that. Sometimes you just need a little snack and you don't want to rob yourself of that, especially if you're feeling that depression, but just choose one that's going to be much healthier and a little more uplifting to your well-being and that you can feel really good about. And so I think that is a way you can do that. you know, so there's different kinds of depression, and there's kind of different kinds of anxiety too. But anxiety on the whole is high vata, high prana, low ojas. Mm-hmm. And major depressive disorder is low prana, low ojas, and high vata. So the vata can be high and the prana can be low. And then the minor or the chronic, we'll call it chronic depression because it's another condition called minor depression, technically. The chronic depression, the chronic low-grade depression, the dysthymia, is what is the high kapha with the higher ojas and the lower prana. Mm-hmm. That's treated differently. And then there's something that is called minor depression, which is really the infrequent depression that people yeah. experience. And it doesn't last very long, and it often doesn't require much treatment at all, except to maybe just sort of take a little bit of a rest and get away and regroup. Mm-hmm. And that's called minor depression. And it's basically low ojas. And so we just need a little bit of respite, go for a little retreat somewhere, go for a walk in the mountains and regroup. Mm-hmm. And everybody experiences that from time to time.
I like the focus on the subtle energies because I think it gives us something tangible to think about. And instead of just thinking, well, I'm an anxious person, it's like, now we're dealing with this low ojas that we're going to build up now. And then being able to take steps to do that. I liked when you were mentioning with the major depression that you often need to have intervention. And I really feel like with any of these that you're experiencing, having support is really helpful when you're working with a practitioner, and they can help you to, for one, kind of separate from it a little bit and see that, you know, you are a loving, good, happy, kind, wonderful person. This isn't anything about who you are as a person. And also situational, when you're talking about occasionally, you know, you'll have these depressive episodes can kind of come and go. When we have situations that we know increase that anxiety or increase depression, and we're moving into those, being able to take steps before we get into that can be really helpful. I had a family member who was going through rehab, and they did a lot of work while they were there about breath work. They did a lot of breath practice in order to help with a lot of the anxiety and the depression. And they did different types of breath practice incorporated with yoga. And it was really interesting to watch as she then came back and integrated into the society and her family and things, how often she could use those tools, being able to see, oh, this situation I'm going into may be a trigger for me. And I don't love the word trigger, but that's a common phrase people understand is, you know, something that you might step into that you could see this may affect my vata, it's going to rise and I may experience some anxiety here, or I'm, you know, having a big life change coming up that could create anxiety. You know, we just moved our family and there's been so much vata happening and going into new schools for my kids, watching their anxiety levels be really high. And I was really proud of my daughter who got up early. Yesterday was their first day of school and she's 13 and she watches everything I do. And we understand and discuss a lot of things, but she's much more kapha in her dosha, but she was really, I mean, we're all very vata vitiated right now because of circumstances. And she got up early and had found a really beautiful meditation for anxiety on YouTube. Bless her cute little heart. And I came in to make sure she was up and going, and she was sitting quietly on her bed with the window open so she could see outside. And she was listening to this meditation about anxiety and just kind of helping her work through it. And afterwards I asked her how she felt. And she said, I feel so much more calm and less jittery. Like, I feel like I'm okay to move into this. And having wisdom that comes from knowing, okay, I want to work with this. I'm not going to judge myself for having this emotion. I'm going to actually do something that's proactive to help. So I think having tools is always so good. Love Ayurveda for that. The tools we are given are insurmountable. I mean, I think we underestimate the power of like the routine creation with anxiety and having that, you know, waking up at the same time, going to bed at the same time, having our meals. And I feel like that's needs to be emphasized to people, is the simplicity doesn't mean it doesn't work.
I think that's absolutely true. In fact, it works because of its simplicity. It is so natural and easy to understand. Ayurveda really is the language of the heart. And so we intuitively already know it. And that's why it seems so simple, but we tend to block it out, I guess you would say, and forget, and we need to be reminded. I like to think of a process of guidance, tools, guidance, medicine. And so let's use your daughter, since you brought that up. She's getting the guidance now to learn the tools. And she went to YouTube, which is wonderful. So that's where she's getting her guidance from. It's wonderful that she did that. A lot of people won't. And so they may want a practitioner who will give them some of that guidance. But you've got to get that guidance from somewhere so that you can learn the tools. And any you know, you can get it from a book, you can get it from YouTube, you can get it from a practitioner, but you need that guidance so that you can learn the tools needed for self-care. And your daughter is doing such a beautiful job using those tools for self-care. And then we need guidance again, because when we are unable to manage our own care, we need to have that person or that place that we are connected to, especially if we know we have a more serious tendency. I talked about the tendencies before, which might be familial tendencies, but we talked about that tendency. And if you know you have that tendency, then you need to have another place you can go to for guidance. And that is going to certainly be your Ayurvedic doctor or your clinical specialist that you're going to be working with. And that person then is now going to take the next step into medicine. And medicine doesn't necessarily mean drugs. Medicine is now the intelligent application of the practices in order to correct the imbalance. But now you're at a place where you need that close guidance in order to make sure that you successfully implement it into your life.
Yes.
And so that's going to include diet. It's going to include routines. It's going to include yoga and meditation. And it may also include herbal medicines at that time. And those herbal medicines are going to be the next step in terms of changing your physiology. And those medicines have to be matched up exactly to the physiological disturbance that is causing the problem. It's not as simple as, oh, take this medicine for anxiety or this one for depression, because as I've said, they are different in different people. Mm-hmm. And so a good Ayurvedic doctor or clinical specialist will be able to prescribe the appropriate medicines at that time. And that's necessary. So that then becomes the next step. And then we go back to our practices to be able to sustain our well-being again. Mm-hmm. And then if we spiral down, then we need to know where do we go in order to get the help that we need. And that's why we're here. But over time, as people practice this, their consciousness is transforming. And as consciousness transforms, we have fewer and fewer episodes of anxiety, fewer and fewer episodes of depression, and those episodes are not as severe. And that's a cycle that is going to occur. It's going to happen. It's going to be two steps up and one step down and two steps up and one step down. And it's going to take time, because it takes time in order to heal the deepest challenges that we experience. These challenges are not only based on familial tendencies, but they are complicated by the traumas of our life. And so therefore, we're going to need that support as we go through this journey to heal the tendencies and to heal the traumas. And we can absolutely do that through the science of Ayurveda with the guidance of a good practitioner.
I 100% agree with that. And I've seen that with clients who I work with more closely when we're first dealing with some of these emotional tendencies, or we're dealing with some issues, because we really want to dial it in. We want to get it just perfect for what they're needing. And then as they work with it, they touch base and they come back, and I may see them not as frequently, right? Because they're seeing transformation in their own life. But it's beautiful to have this touch point and to be able to watch them over time. You've had that experience much longer than I have, because I am newer in practicing. But in the last 2 years, when I started as a health counselor, just some of these clients that I have been working with over this entire period, just seeing what they've been able to transform within their own minds and consciousness is beautiful. And they see such a difference, and their lives are so different. That's what I think when we can hold on to that vision or intention of where are we going, then it makes all the, you know, steps back and the couple steps forward worth it, because we can see there is a light that we're moving towards, and it's actually ourselves. We're just moving towards ourselves. But if we can hold that vision, and if it's too hard to hold the vision for yourself in the beginning, your practitioner can hold it for you, because we can see what's really happening and who you are underneath the things you're experiencing that aren't really you anyways. So I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I think you said that really well. Your practitioner is there to guide you back to yourself. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we lose our way. And yourself is beautiful. And it's always important to remember that.
Mm-hmm. I've loved this conversation. I think these are topics that we can come back to over and over again as we're growing in our knowledge of what it means to be human, what it means to be alive. And I want people to know, if they are local to Nevada City, there is a beautiful clinic there, a beautiful full treatment center that is worth the trip. If you're anywhere in California and you can make it there, not only is the energy of the space just so healing, but the practitioners that work there are amazing. I mean, you really have every resource that anyone could need when they're stepping into Ayurveda right there for them. Are you able to do virtual? What's happening in California right now? Are you mostly virtual? Are you able to do in person at this point?
Well, we're doing both. We have patients that we work with in person that are here locally. And we also have patients that we see all over the world through technology. And so we're here to serve. And anytime we can be of help, anytime we can be of service, we're happy to do so. We have a complete Ayurvedic pharmacy here. All medicines are individually formulated to meet the needs for the patients. And we're always happy to be of service. It's a beautiful gift for us to be able to serve humanity in this way, to do what we can to alleviate suffering and to bring about balance and healing.
Well, I know it's been a huge change in my life finding the college. It's been fantastic. So I'll put some links in our show notes so people can find you, because I think anytime that you guys can, that as you're listening, interact with Dr. Halpern on any level. And I know he has a lot of resources there. He's doing Facebook Lives. Getting connected with him on social media would be really useful, because there's a lot of ways that you can learn and grow in Ayurveda just through connecting with him. Is there anything specific in that realm that you'd want them to know about? I know you do these lives. Are there other ways that you'd want them to know they could reach you?
You know, I'm always available to people when they're in need. And people join my Facebook group, which is called Ayurveda Yoga Nidra and Yoga Therapy with Dr. Mark Halpern. And it's a large Facebook community. And you're welcome to ask questions there as well. I have, unfortunately, more questions come in than I'm able to answer, because there's 10,000 yeah. people in that group now that are participating. Wow. That's on Facebook. So for those that are on Facebook, by all means, check in on that group. I think that's a great way to stay connected. I post on there two or three times per week, usually mm-hmm. something about Ayurveda or answering questions or some classical information about Ayurveda. You can also keep in touch, as you mentioned, through our Facebook and YouTube lives and Instagram live that we do. And all the, you know, there's a YouTube channel for the California College of Ayurveda with dozens of videos that I've done over time. And you're welcome to just browse through that video library. And if you need to or wish to contact me, you're welcome to email me. My email address is drh@ayurvedacollege.com. You're welcome to go to our college website at ayurvedacollege.com. And you're welcome to check out my book or my Yoga Nidra CD called Yoga Nidra and Self-Healing. And it's just a joy to be able to do this work. And I consider it a great gift to be able to be of service in through Ayurveda, which to me is the most loving, kind science that I've ever encountered.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. I think that we've all been greatly fed. And I appreciate your willingness to share your knowledge with the world, with our listeners, and everyone here at the Ayurveda Life School. We're really grateful. Thank you so much, Dr. Halpern.
Thank you, Heather, for the opportunity to spend this time with you.
What a privilege that we had to be able to learn from Dr. Halpern today. What an awesome experience that was. And I'm so grateful that you guys could join in that and that you could be in that conversation. Check out the show notes. I'm going to have links there for all the information that he shared so that you can stay connected with him. And if you have not ordered your Ayurveda starter kit, go to ayurvedalifeschool.com and get that in the mail today so that you can get started living more Ayurvedically and more well-rounded and balanced. And if you have not done the immersion, I'm not sure why. You really should. It's amazing and awesome. Come to ayurvedalifeschool.com/ayurveda immersion and you can join and register and start the moment that you sign up. Your transformation will begin. Have a beautiful week. We'll talk to you soon. Namaste. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at ayurvedalifeschool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.